She's bold, she's brilliant, and yeah, I've got a bit of a crush. Annie Temple is back, and this time we're diving into the chaos of the current dating scene. From red flags to risque first dates, nothing's off limits. If you thought her last episode about sex work turned heads, wait till you hear what she has to say about modern love. Buckle up, Annie doesn't hold back. And neither do I. Welcome back to another episode of Digital Dating with Anonymous Andrew, and I am super, super excited. Tonight we have Annie Temple back with us.
I hope that name sounds familiar to you because Annie was on, I should have looked it up, maybe 3 months ago, and she came on to talk about her book called How Sex Work Shaped My Life. So for those on YouTube, I'm showing the book. And she told her whole story about her sex work, and she can talk a little bit about it again if she wants, but it's not escorting. It's more massage therapy and things like that. So I just wanted people to understand that it's not escorting. However, tell us what happened quickly, why you had to change the name of the book.
Well, yeah, so the name was How Sex Work Shaped My Life, and I thought it was such a brilliant title because...
Yeah.
You know, like a lot of other memoirs written by adult entertainers have very sexy titles, and they like Whore of New York and Cop to Call Girl. And like there's many. And so I wanted a really sexy name, and that name really resonated with me. Unfortunately, Amazon shadow banned it, which means that when you try to search it out, it doesn't come up. Even though it's still there, you'd have to like click on another book that I wrote and then click on my author profile to find my book. And so that was really frustrating for me. And some places in the United States and maybe other parts of the world as well, my book didn't show up at all. So I was like, okay, this must be because of the title. So I decided to change the title. And now I've re-released the book as Healing in Stilettos. And that one you should be able to search and find, Healing in Stilettos.
But everything from cover to cover is the same. Okay, good. Because it's a great, great book. And I did read it. And it's a fantastic book. So to the audience, if you didn't hear the last interview, it's a great book. Her story is phenomenal. And she's one of my most top, I would even say top three favorite guests. Because she's just a wonderful, wonderful person. And she's had a very interesting life. She's had some hardships. And she's overcome all of them. And she's and I really applaud her. And kudos to you. And she's also very open and honest and vulnerable. And we could talk a little bit about that if you want, about your medical condition. But that's not what really why you're here today. What I invited Annie back because maybe a month ago or so, you posted a blog about dating profiles. Yes. And it caught my attention. And because my current season of the Digital Dating Podcast with Anonymous Andrew has always been about relationships and dating, but the first two seasons were about heartbreak and how to heal and identify and regain self-respect, because a lot of people who go through horrible heartbreaks and breakups, they are broken people, and I was, and it took me a while to get back on my feet. But now that I'm back on my feet, I'm back on the dating apps, and I've been on the dating apps since 2008. I tell the audience this all the time. Back in 2006, 7, and 8, when eHarmony and Match.com came on the scene, they weren't on the cell phones. They were on the desktop. You had to log in www.match.com or eHarmony, and you did everything. Of course, when the smartphones came along in 2012, 2014, everybody went to apps, and now everything's an app. Although some of them you can still go online and do it on your desktop. So Annie put out a blog. By the way, let's talk about your website. The name of your website is?
Annie Temple.
Well, how can you forget that? Okay. And I about 10 minutes before we recorded, I was in a panic because I couldn't find the blog. And I know I printed it out. So I went to her website and there it was. So her website's nicely laid out, very easy to navigate. And let's just talk about this quickly also, that besides being an intimate specialist, which you can explain later if you like, she's also a romance coach?
Intimacy coach.
Intimacy coach.
Yeah, a lot of people, especially being in the working in the sex industry, I come across a lot of, especially gentlemen, who struggle with feeling comfortable dating and going out and meeting people for various reasons. Usually insecurity, sometimes just inexperience because they're coming out of long-term marriages or whatever. And often they have health conditions that make them feel like they're not desirable anymore. So what I found just kind of happened naturally is that when I started offering coaching, that this seems to be the type of person that is gravitating towards me the most right now.
Because I know you, and I did the first interview with you and I've been following you, you have a health condition too. So, which I think that, what's the right way to put this? So you say you have clients coming to you with health conditions, and so you have one yourself, which might be
feel more safe to come to me.
Right.
Yeah.
And or the opposite. Some people may not want to come. I mean, in the dating world, may not want to come to you when they find out what it is all about, which is just horrible. That's just I don't want to say discrimination, but that's just stupid. You know, it's just stupid.
I can understand. It's if a person doesn't really understand something, it can be kind of scary or gross. I mean, basically what Andrew's talking about is I have an ostomy bag on my stomach, which is a medical appliance that replaces my large intestine. And so I don't go poop the old fashioned way anymore. It comes out of my stoma into my poop bag that's on my stomach.
I almost envy you because this is going to sound weird and I've never openly admitted this anywhere, but we are part of the animal kingdom and the biological workings of our body are so, if you see an elephant take a dump in the nature, nobody thinks twice about it. When you see a horse poop, you know, on the horse farm, but when humans and every human does that, but I find it still to be a gross part of being a human.
Yes.
I just, the thought of having to go into the bathroom and whether you're in there for 2 minutes or 18 minutes and you have to read a book and you're constipated or you got diarrhea, I almost envy the fact that I could just have a little bag where it just all go into, you know?
Honestly, it's made my life so much better because of the pain and suffering that I was going through before. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about that real quickly. Just so you went through, you had some medication issues way back when that really destroyed your intestines, right?
Yes. I had a pharmaceutical injury. It destroyed my large intestine. And then I spent the next like 17 years since then going through different kinds of health challenges, including surgeries, like getting
operations,
my intestines removed,
and
lots of hospitalizations. And now I have like a whole slew of diagnoses.
But you didn't give up. You know, you persevered through all of that and you've come out the other side and you now are, in my opinion, you're famous on Instagram and TikTok and I just applaud you and I adore you. So
thank you.
Okay. When was the last time you were on a dating app?
It was like when I posted that blog.
Okay. I think it was a month. I only came across it a month ago. Was it about a month ago or was it longer?
It was about a month ago. Okay. Yeah. And actually, it was funny because right around the time I wrote that blog post, I saw you post a comment on one of your socials that was exactly the same thing that I put in my blog post about having a profile picture with somebody else in the picture with you.
Okay. Thank you. That's a good segue. Let's just jump into it. What and you? I think you start off. I'm on page one here. So I was going to read some of it, but it's like 6 pages long. So I don't want to read to the audience.
The title.
Yeah, but I do want to highlight some of the things that you said. That after learning how to navigate the dating apps, I realized that most people of the people sharing profiles didn't give me the information I needed to decide if I wanted to date them or not. For that reason, I'm going to tell you what I would like to see in your dating profile. And I like that because it's coming from a woman's perspective. And for any men out there, listen. Men don't listen. And listen to what the women are saying, because they're telling you, she right now, Annie is going to tell us what she wants to see in your dating profile. And if you would like the opportunity to maybe match with Annie and date her, you need to do this. So, okay. Let's see. This is so much I want to go over, but I'm trying to, I don't want to go over time. You talk about that you felt like a bumbling idiot because you said the next thing I noticed, I could easily make mistakes, accidentally rejecting on matching with people I didn't mean to. I swiped the wrong way. I agree. You could be scrolling and all of a sudden the picture disappears. And I'm like, oh, wait. I didn't mean to do that. And some of the apps will let you unmatch them. I mean, whatever, undo the left swipe, but not all of them do. Like once they're gone, they're gone. So I've seen that. Okay. Once I started receiving messages from guys, I noticed something that really bothered me as a sex worker. They matched me with me based on my photos without even reading my profile. And when I see the profiles, it becomes obvious that we are opposite in philosophy, and the only reason they would have reached out to me is because they had made a thoughtful selection. I, as a man, will admit that any men are visual. Right. So the first thing that I see is the picture. And if she's attractive, then I'll stop and scroll down to further read the rest of the bio, the descriptions, any of the prompts she might have.
That's the correct way to do it.
Thank you. Because let's talk. So you talked about photos. I guess let's just jump right into the photos, which is what really is your first point in your blog. You say, please have at least one clear face photo for your profile. There are lots of people who are open-minded to meeting people who don't have conventional beauty. Don't hide your face because you think you're ugly. Hiding your face shows your insecurities and makes you way less attractive. But you don't stop there. Don't use photos with your ex-partner cut out. Oh my God, how many times do you see that Photoshop or that you see them two? Obviously, it's two people. But one of them has been cropped out. And it's just really,
I was surprised when I saw that women do that too, because I thought men do that because they're not really the types to take pictures of themselves. And so they just look for one that's already taken, crop it, and post it. But apparently women do it too. That is hilarious.
The amount of time that it takes to pull up, let's say I have a photo of me and my ex, or maybe it's me and my sister, or me and one of my grandkids. And I don't think you should post photos of other people in your profile. They don't have your permission. And I just think it's just not, I want to see you. The only time I think I should see other people in your photo would be maybe the last photo. If you are out at a bar or a club or a wedding or any event, and you're taking a group shot, it shows me that, you know, you're outgoing and you have friends, but clearly I want to know which one is you, because I have seen photo after photo after photo of women with three or four other women, and I have to pick out which one is you, right? So no group shots. No. Okay.
I agree.
The amount of time it takes to crop out somebody, because you literally have to, whether you do it on your phone or you do it on your desktop, you have to use a photo editor. You have to draw that line, or now, of course, some of the new cell phones, you just tap on the person and they disappear. And you said something earlier about men. I don't think you said lazy, but you said men don't do selfies.
Yeah.
And that's correct. A lot of men, except the ones that are at the gym, you know, they think they're all six-pack abs and all that crap. I took the time. So one day I play tennis and pickleball. So one day I took my phone down to the court, and it was a summer day. And my partner and I were playing, and I put the phone on the ground and I hit video, and you could see me running around the court, and I shot for 4 minutes, maybe. And then when I got home, it took me all of 2 minutes to go through the video, and you can pick out a still shot. Well, if you have a current phone, let's say an iPhone or a current Android, a Galaxy or something, they all do this. You can just go through them frame by frame and look for a good shot. And I found I could probably pull up my profile now. There's a shot of me holding my racket and I'm running towards a ball, and it's just a still shot. It didn't take any time and any effort to do that. I took a picture of myself. I'm a big bicyclist. I love to bicycle during the summertime. So one day before I was heading down to the boardwalk, I was out my door. I took the bicycle out. I don't have a garage, so I have to keep it in my kitchen. But when I took it out, I put the bicycle right by the door and I stood behind it. And I put the phone on the counter because the door, the kitchen counter was still there. And I just took a picture of me standing by my bike. And another thing that you mentioned is that people don't smile. And I have come across so many pictures of it's why?
It's not very attractive.
It's not attractive. Anyway, I took a picture of me smiling like I'm about to head down to the boardwalk, to the beach on my bicycle. And it was a beautiful July day, yada, yada, yada. And then there's, of course, there was a time I went to lunch with a friend and we were sitting on a booth. It was like a diner or a Chili's or something, whatever it was. And I handed her the phone and I said, could you take a picture of me, please? And it's me sitting back in the booth and I'm just, I think I had my ginger ale. I don't drink. So I think I had my ginger ale in front of me or something. And she took a picture of me and it's on my profile now. There's no effort. So the people who are putting up these photos, it's not rocket science. It really isn't. So, all right. You talk about photos with kids. I'll let you talk about that.
I mean, obviously, I like what you said about other people haven't consented to having their photo on your profile. And so it's good not to. Me personally, it doesn't turn me off to see them. But I have heard of quite a few female friends saying that it's a real turnoff for them to see pictures of guys with their children. Because they just think it's inappropriate.
I agree. In my bio, I say that I have 3 grown boys and 2 grandchildren. That's enough. So the person that's looking at my profile will know that I'm a father, a single father, but they're grown men. They're 26, 35, and 37. And I don't mention the age of my grandkids because you really don't want to put the grandkids out there too much. But I just say I have 2 beautiful, I adore my grandkids or something like that. So yeah. Be careful with putting kids in your profile. I think it's dangerous. I don't want to go down a dark path, but there are a lot of creepy guys out there that if you have like a 12-year-old daughter in there, he might date you just for the daughter. So be careful with that. I know that's dark, but we have to be realistic that there are predators out there. There are scammers. There are people out there that are on the dating apps, not for the real intention. They're up to something, right? So don't put your kids in there. Okay, you said people holding drinks or looking wasted in their profiles are a huge turnoff because many people with addictions, which I was raised around and I dated in the past. So you want to talk about that a little bit? And sure. I'm going to rebut to that.
Yeah. Okay. So for me, sensitive to addiction because I've had addiction in my family. My dad, who passed away when he was 62, struggled with alcoholism his whole adult life. And many of my close family and friends that I love very dearly and past partners are people who really struggle with addiction. And it's so heartbreaking. And it's like addiction just creates liars. That's what it does. It turns people, because to lie is to survive when you're in survival mode. And when you're in addiction, you're in survival mode. So it's not that I'm blaming them or judging them. It's just something that I don't want to willingly invite into my life.
It's again. A potential red flag.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when I see someone holding a beer or holding a glass of wine with like the glossy eyes or looking wasted or like they're at a party or something.
I agree.
To me, that's a red flag that they think that's, they're normalizing that, they're glorifying that. That's something that they want to show as a big part of their life. So for me, that's not what I want in my life.
I can say the same because I'm a recovering alcoholic and this July I will have 10 years of sobriety and I clearly state that, well, I shouldn't say clearly, but in my profile where, you know where it says, do you smoke, do you drink? Mm-hmm. And then some of the apps now just say drugs, or either they might say 420 friendly, or they might say drugs, you know, any type of drugs. And so you can say yes, no, yes, no, yes, no. And of course, cigarettes too. There's the whole thing about smoking, which we'll get to in a second. I clearly say no, I do not drink.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you something interesting. I was talking to a woman 4 nights ago, and we were chatting and chatting and chatting, and something came up about drinking. And I said to her, I'm sober because I don't think she, When people see drinking, no, they don't necessarily, they just, because there's a whole movement now of people are trying to just live their lives without drinking. There's a, like mm-hmm. a movement going, they're not alcoholics, they're just choosing not to drink. And so if you see no, that just means that they chose not, they could be religious, they could just be, they could be like you. They could have a traumatic background in alcoholism with their family or something, and they just don't drink. Does it? But in my case, I am a recovering alcoholic. So she said to me, I said to her, you know, I'm sober 10 years and I don't drink. The first question, right after that, she said to me, would it bother you if I had a glass of wine while I was in your company? That's exactly how she phrased it. And I had to think about that. Now, I know the answer right off the bat. No, it's not a problem because as an alcoholic, I can't not, I'm around alcohol all the time. You know, I go to the Christmas and Thanksgiving. I had to bring a bottle of scotch to my aunt's house.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't go empty handed. So I had to walk into a liquor store and buy a bottle of scotch. And it wasn't a problem. You know, I walked in. I said to the guy, give me a bottle of Johnny Walker Red. And I walked out, you know, in and out. Life goes on. For us alcoholics in recovery, the world drinks and smokes and does drugs. And the more time...
You can't control others. You can only control yourself.
Correct. And the more time of sobriety you have, the less that it affects you. And it does not. So if I go out with a woman... Now, I'll say this. I dated a woman about a year ago. It was during Christmas, though, not this past Christmas, one before. And we were about our third date, and we went to see a Christmas light show. So you drive, it was on the beach, and they set up all these nice lights, and you drive 2 miles to all these beautiful lights. And we went to dinner, and she downed. She had a martini and then 2 glasses of wine. And while she was in the car, clearly she either couldn't handle her alcohol or it just hit her. She started talking about things that I found disturbing, a little bit racist. And then she got into the political world. And I said, okay, so when she drinks, she becomes Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, because none of that came up while she was sober. So needless to say, I did not continue dating her. So
I also had like guys talking to me in the messaging part of the apps, and like I couldn't help it if I wanted to, like if they alluded to getting drinks together immediately, or like one guy talked about cooking a meal together and having some wine with that. And me personally, my first suspicion whenever somebody suggests alcohol to be at the first meeting is that they are either insecure, so they need the liquid courage,
social lubrication.
Yeah. Or they want to get me drunk and hopefully take advantage of me. Right. Like I just, my head goes there. That's the first thing. So I just, for me, it's so important to get somebody that's comfortable being sober. Even if they drink, that's fine. I just want to not attract another alcoholic or a drug addict.
And I don't blame you. And the first meet and greet, which I call the first date, should be a meet and greet. You should meet somewhere publicly, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, and I hate the cliche, but yes, go to a Starbucks or go to a cafe, coffee shop, whatever, or people now go to parks. Just, you don't need alcohol on the first date. There's no, unless there's the intent of the hookup. So like if you're on Tinder or some of the apps where it's clearly that you're hooking up that night, then I can see.
Is that Tinder a hookup app?
Oh, yeah.
Because that's the one I was on.
Okay, so Tinder was, after eHarmony and Match back in 2008-09, I think Tinder was one of the first apps that came on smartphones. And I think it was around 2011-12. And initially, it was designed to find somebody local to you. So you could be walking down the streets of Manhattan and you're horny and you want a quickie and you could find somebody. And this is what I was hearing. I never did it. That you find somebody and they say, hey, where are you? Oh, I'm on 5th and Lexington. Okay, let's meet up on, you know, at Penn Station or something. And they would go and they would hook up. That was, yeah. And Tinder got that reputation because it was a hookup. Now, over the past 5 years, I think Tinder is trying to pull away from that and become more of a serious app because I think it doesn't want that reputation anymore.
I did get a few messages late at night, like, what you doing tonight?
Well, on Tinder?
Yeah. And yeah. I would get it the next morning because I go to bed so early and then I'd be like, nothing with you, man.
Yeah. Well, he was clearly looking to hook up that night. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. I respect. That's fine. I respect
it too.
As long as people are clear about their
upfront and honest. Yeah. Yep. Okay. All right. Let me make sure. You talk about photos of expensive cars and expensive holiday trips. I have a thought on that. So I come across women who have, they're standing in Paris with the Eiffel Tower behind them. Mm-hmm. They're standing in Rome with the Leaning Tower of Pizza, whatever it's called. And at first that used to bother me. I'm like, oh, you're showing, like you say here, you're showing off your success, which is wonderful. And I applaud it. So actually, you're okay with that.
The problem is you can set yourself up to be a target for someone who's only interested in your money or
a scammer or somebody, yeah. A gold digger. Yeah.
When you're showing off all your luxury items, you're going to attract a certain type of person. Now, they won't all be bad. Some people will be attracted to success. That idea that you're successful, yeah. And those might be great people for you, but some people will be attracted to you,
your money,
as their ticket.
They don't want you, they want your money.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So I at first didn't like that. I think it was my own prejudice because I'm not a world traveler. I have traveled the world. I've been to South America and I've been to your country. I've been to Canada. I've been to the Caribbean. I pretty much stayed in this hemisphere. I was in Colombia, Ecuador, Panama, Mexico, Canada, St. Thomas, Aruba, Jamaica, blah, blah, blah. But I've never been to Europe. So, which I'd like to do. And I just renewed my passport. So if I do start dating again and the woman has a passport and we can financially get our shit together and I'd like to go to Paris or whatever, probably Italy because I'm Italian. I get that. So now I'm starting to look at them like, oh, they're worldly. They are a traveler and they get out. And especially when you get, I'm a little older than you, but I want to start traveling. So I changed my mindset thinking on that. I don't see that as a negative thing anymore. I'm like, okay. The only problem is that I want to go to Paris. She's already been there, you know, but I don't have a problem with it. Okay, next. Oh, okay, you talked about this. Smile, all right? Yeah. Maybe you're someone who never smiles. We wouldn't want you to misrepresent yourself in photos. But if you're a happy person who smiles often, please smile in your photos. It's simple. If you're looking to attract somebody, there's nothing like a smile. And I used to do something that I later found was a no-no. When I saw a beautiful woman in a dating app and she was smiling, I would write, sometimes you could just comment on their photo, and I would write, you have a beautiful smile. And I thought that was nice and endearing. I find out that's a common opening line and women hate it. I don't know.
I'm one of those rare women who will mention give me.
Okay, great. I thought it was a nice thing to say. You have a beautiful smile, but apparently it's overused. I don't know.
Oh,
okay.
Whatever. Sounds like somebody's bitter.
Okay, I agree.
Not you, them.
No, but I agree. All right, let's talk about profile descriptions. While I do not think it's important to mention the things you like to do, well, I do think it's important, like camping, hiking, traveling, fishing. If you're passionate about motorcycles, boats, and cars, and music, what am I really looking for in your profile is what is your character? To show me what kind of person you are, please tell me what your values are. Do you value friendship, good communication? Are your children a top priority? Do you make time to volunteer? And you go on. So talk about, you don't want to see that. See, I tell them two headshots, two full body shots. I want to see your body. And if you're overweight or underweight, show it anyway. Because like you said about your, in the first paragraph, you talked about some people don't think they're beautiful enough. So they have a dark shadow in their face or, you know, they make it so you really can't see their face. When I see something like that, I know you're trying to hide something. And if you're trying to hide something, you're not being honest. So
It's sad how many people struggle with loving
themselves. Self-image.
And honestly, if they don't love themselves enough, they shouldn't even be on a dating app.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. Thank you. Because if you can't love yourself, how do you expect me to love you? And I didn't love myself. Do you know my story? I was not a self-respective man many years ago. But today, I am very happy in my own skin and yada, yada. But what I do say is, so after the two headshots, the two body shots, give me two action shots. So if you play volleyball, if you kayak, if you climb mountains, if you skydive, I mean, crazy stuff. Yeah. Show me a picture of you dropping out of a plane.
But
yeah.
Even more important is to know what kind of person you are.
Thank you. Now, how can they tell you? How? Tell me how that they can tell you that.
I think that the problem is people don't even know what their own values are. That's the first challenge. But, you know, recognizing what your values are, like, and then demonstrating that through your profile by saying what your values are, what's important to you, so I can get a sense of your character. So, you know, like, some guys are very funny in their profiles and their humor might not really jive with me. It might be like, oh God, one of these guys. And I'm so glad they did that their profile that way, because so it tells me that we're
left.
Not. Yeah, we're not going to be, you know, or other people who are like, they absolutely want you to be vaccinated, or they absolutely want you to be unvaccinated, or, you know, no Trumpers or no wokists,
okay.
You know, like, it's just like, I like that. I think people should be really specific about what they want, because it gives you a sense of what their character is like, too. You know, especially if it sounds like they're a little bit discriminatory, that's a no-no for me. I sit really center politically, and I'm very tolerant. And I love everybody on the right and everybody on the left. I just love them all. So I could never be with someone who is really confrontational politically.
Okay. I 100% agree. And I'm apolitical. I'm right there in the middle. And I'm not going to say who I voted for last election, but I vote for the person that I think is going to help me the next 4 years. And that's, so if you're going to make the economy better, bring gas prices down, whatever, I'll vote for you. There's too many, and I don't want to get political, but there's too many of these like politicians that the first thing they want to go after is the abortion rules. I mean, come on.
I know. It's annoying.
Thank you. That's the word I was looking for. So
it is.
The only thing that I would... Remember I said there was 99% that I agree with you with?
Yeah.
But you might be able to turn me around on this. When I see no Trumpers or no, like, either way, either they're liberals or they're conservatives, and it shows that they are diehard. I might agree with you that means that they're going to drag me down to the next rally at the, you know, in Manhattan, downtown by Wall Street. We're going to go camp down there for 3 days and, you know, down with Wall Street. No, that's not what I'm doing. So if it's in their profile that they're into that, that is a swipe left for me. I'm not an activist. I've done plenty of that in my lifetime, and I'm whatever. But at first I didn't like the deal. So those are called deal breakers. When I saw the deal breakers, I was at first thinking you're very negative, because they would list no Trumpers or no smokers or no drugs or this one. If you don't have a valid passport, don't even bother contacting me. I'm like, what?
That is the best.
Well, that's what prompted me to go renew my passport. That's ironically that you said that, because I didn't have a valid passport. I had one, but it expired. So I went out and renewed it. So,
well, that's hilarious.
I'm emerging. I'm as they say, a work in progress, because it used to bother me when they said things like that. But then I said, well, what if we do get involved and in 1 year in, they want to take a cruise? I don't have a passport, you know, and it could take 6 months to get a passport in the
US.
Or
like you really fall for each other right away, and then you find out that you completely disagree on something really fundamentally important to you.
Correct.
You know, that's just, there's like, why waste our time, right?
No, I agree 100%.
I already find that dating apps waste so much time.
Well,
they're designed to suck your time away from you. So
I'm
going to,
we have time. I want to, I chat GPT'd something that I went over with the audience last week, but I want to quickly go over with you. I said to chat GPT, what is wrong with the dating scene, the modern dating scene? And it spit out a couple of headlines. First, they say that the great dating app burnout, it's a time to delete and start dating in the real world. I thought that was interesting. But now to your point, are dating apps rigged? They are designed to keep you on there as long as possible. Mm-hmm. They don't want you to find a match.
Nope.
You find a match, you're off, and then you let your subscription expire and they lose a customer. So dating apps, the algorithms, shadow banning, and the pay-to-play model. So they will tease you with the free version or the basic plan, which is $12.99, but you only get one super swipe or something, whatever silly gimmick that they have. And then you have to upgrade to the $20 or $30 a month in order to talk to the person, something like that. So they're designed to keep us on there.
Just even how they work. Like you see the picture, then you have to click to see the profile, then you have to click to see this, click to see that. It takes so much time just to look at one person. And then you have to decide really quickly whether they're a match or not, which is so dumb because I'll be just sitting there staring, thinking, I don't know. It's like, and that sucks my time away because I don't want to lose them if they might be a potential match, but I'm not sure. And I want to keep going and keep scrolling. And if I match with them, almost for sure, they'll contact me. Because something I learned about men, that first of all, I heard a statistic recently that men swipe like match with 60% of the women that they see, and women match with 4%.
Really?
Yeah. So this explains why when a woman matches with someone, she gets, you know, inundated. Any person she matches with, they contact her because the men aren't getting matched with. So the second someone matches with them, they're on it.
They contact her. Yep.
And they're like, oh, somebody matched with me, somebody's interested, you know. But and the woman is just this, she's got, you know, wean it down to a small,
she's got 500 in like 100 messages in her in a week, and she's got to go through them. Well, that's the next thing where it says swiping fatigue or dating feels like a chore, and I agree. So you're basically saying it's too much work.
Yes.
And I said to the audience last weekend that there are nights, like after we record tonight, I'm going to do the few things that I do before I go to bed so I get ready for work tomorrow. But then I climb into bed to watch TV and I put on a movie or a show or whatever. And I look to the left and I see my phone and I think, oh, I haven't looked at any of the profiles today. But then I look at the TV and I look at the phone and I go, nah, tomorrow night, you know. And because to me, if I start swiping, I'm going to miss the movie, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's either one or the it's a chore.
Like before you know it, time has just slipped away.
And then it's
so
10,
fast.
10 o'clock, 10:30, and you
talked
about...
And then you've
about...
got these people you don't even know messaging you, and you feel like you should respond. And so now all these people that are complete strangers that have no investment in my life, and I have no investment in their life, I feel like obligated to talk to them back and forth so we can get to know each other. But it's taking up so much time. It's like, I hate it. And then if you try to meet them in person, then there comes the awkwardness of, you know, if you don't want to pursue it. That's also really uncomfortable for me. And I'm a very bold person that's comfortable with confrontation. But I think that it really puts off a lot of people in general, and women especially, just having to reject people. Because that happens, I think, a lot. I don't know how it is for men, but I feel like men are more open-minded. And like my guy friends who are on dating apps, when I say to them, like, why is your profile so like everybody else's? It just talks about hiking and fishing and camping and motorcycles and cars. And you got a picture of you with a drink in your hand. And I know that you have these strong opinions about this and these strong feelings about this and these interests and these other things. Why don't you put that on there? And they're like, well, I don't want to. I want to cast a wide net and I don't want to push away any potential. You know, I had another guy ask me the other day, like, should I take my age off my profile? And I'm like, why? And he said, maybe it's making some women not match with me. And I said, would you really want to date someone who wouldn't want to be with you because of your age?
Age, yeah.
You know what I mean? Because, and it doesn't, I don't know why, but it seems like a lot of guys think about it differently than how women do. And they're more open-minded about accepting almost anyone. I feel like they're not as thoughtful in choosing a potential person to date on these dating apps, and it can waste everybody's time.
Yeah. One thing that I try to make a rule, and it 99% of the time fails. So we chat 2 days, 3 days, maybe a phone call. If we exchange phone numbers and then we talk one or two nights and if there's still a connection, before I meet them, I will ask them, can we do a video date? Because most of the apps will have that built into it, so you don't have to exchange phone numbers if you don't want to. Or if you have already exchanged phone numbers, then you could do a FaceTime on iPhone or Google, what is it, Google Meet, and I want to see you. So it shows me that I'm not being catfished. It shows me that the pictures that you put up are relatively recent, and I can actually read your body language. Yes. And talk to you. And I'm not talking about a 45-minute. Let's just talk for 10 minutes. Just say, hey. And that might take some of the awkwardness out of the real first date that you were talking about.
Yeah. That's weird that you've mentioned twice having short first dates, and I kind of cut it off at an hour, but I never knew that we could go shorter. Yeah. I thought an hour was kind of a respectful period of time. But then they always seem surprised when at an hour, I'm like, well, I guess I should get going.
Well, let me ask you, at that hour, are you enjoying their company?
Honestly, I've enjoyed every date I've been on. I've been really lucky. I didn't feel like any of them were someone that I would pursue romantic relationship with. This is part of me and who I am. I just love people. I find people fascinating. I want to get to know them. And I think when people spend time with me, they feel like they've been really heard and seen because I really am listening and I really am interested in knowing about them.
And that's part of what you do for a living.
Yeah. And so I think often they feel like more attracted to me than I might to them.
Okay.
In a romantic way, because they're feeling the love that I just naturally kind of give, you know?
I always gauge the date on how it's going. One date I drove into New York City because she didn't have a car, and I picked her up and we went to a cafe, and it was horrible. The woman was just horrible. Didn't ask me any questions. We both played tennis. So you think there's a common ground there that we could talk about. And every time I mentioned tennis, like, where did you play? And do you know what your rating is? I was scratching for like questions, and I was getting yes, no answers. And I couldn't wait to get out of there. And it was horrible. It was a horrible date. I went on a date a couple of weeks ago. The woman was out of state, but she has parents who live here and she grew up here. So she comes back every couple of months, and she was staying to help her parents out and just she has her own business, whatever, like something like you. And she played pickleball. So she said to me, let's play pickleball on our first date. And she was going to the courts around the corner from me. So we went and played pickleball. And then after pickleball, because you really don't get to chat with them, you can play with them.
Yeah.
But there was no like real conversation. So I said to her, I'd like to take you to brunch because it was a Sunday. It happened to be January, New Year's Day. And she said, sure, let's go. So we went to this really great brunch place down by the beach, and we had a great lunch. And at the very end, when the check came, which I always pay, which I'd like to talk about too, she says to me, I think one of us went to the bathroom and came back. So I paid the bill. And then she says to me, Andrew, I'm having a wonderful morning with you. The pickleball was great, and thank you for brunch, but I just think that we'd be best as friends. And okay, and I talked about this a couple times back after the date. Normally, about 4 years ago or later, that would have hurt. That would have been like a flat-out rejection. And this time, I said, yeah, okay, I'm fine with that. And we played pickleball one more time. And then she moved back. I think she was in New Mexico. She flew to New Mexico. And I haven't heard from her since. But I think the point I was making there is I spent 3 hours or 3.5 hours with her only to find out that she only wants to be friends. And the only thing that I didn't like about that whole interaction was that I think she knew early on she probably wasn't attracted to me. And that's fine. Why did you let me pay for lunch? Now, I will always insist. I'm a gentleman. The wallet's coming out. I'm going to say to the waiter, bring me the check. But if you know that you're not going to pursue romance with me, I'm not being cheap here because I have paid on every single date. She could have offered, especially when she waited till after I paid to tell me, I don't think we're a romance. So I didn't like that whole, the way she presented that. Okay.
That's so funny because I made a mistake like that where I went on a date. And we went for brunch, and he offered to pay for everything. And I was like, thank you, really like, thank you so much. I was really, you know, grateful and gracious about it. But then he wanted to go out again, go out for brunch again. And we decided to be friends. And he said he wasn't looking for a relationship really either. I didn't actually meet him on a dating app. He just asked me to go out and hang out.
Okay.
But anyway, so the second time when the bill was coming, because he had also offered again to pay, he said, maybe you could get the tip this time. And I realized that he had wanted me to offer to pay the tip the first time too. And it hadn't even occurred to me. And I think in my defense, it's just because, one, I'm not used to dating. I'm really not. I'm like, and two, because I am used to having people pay for the whole
meal.
So it just didn't even occur to me. You know what I mean?
But
I learned from that, and I really appreciated that he had the courage to say something so that I could be more like proactive in that
proactive
way in the future.
Listen,
if I'm on a date,
you, like you said, you're used to not that guys would pay for you, and that's normal, especially if you're a beautiful woman, and any guy, especially if the intent is romantic, before the woman says anything like, I think we should be platonic, I'm going to pay. I just found it that particular instance, she knew before I paid that she was going to say that, but she just waited till afterwards. I don't have a problem with that. My last girlfriend said to me, she was a beautiful woman, and she said to me one day that she has never paid for any dinner anywhere with any guy, even friendly guys. And she was almost saying like, I'm so beautiful, guys are lining up to pay for me. And it really bothered me, but she was right. You know, like she could really get any guy to take her out and pay for her. But that's kind of like narcissistic, you know?
Yeah, for me, it's more like I've been a single mom. Anytime I've been single in the last 25 years, it was when being a single mom. And so it was always just a financial thing. And guys, if they wanted to take me out, I didn't have any money. So
that's
they would
different.
Pay. That's how it always was for me. And then so this time when this gentleman asked me out, it was a similar situation. I'm a single mom and I couldn't afford to go for brunch. And so he offered to pay. And so I just did it. But I do think it is very respectful to offer to pay for the tip. And I'm so glad that now I could be aware of that. And
yeah.
I'm so glad you shared your story with me, too, because that gives me a perspective that I wouldn't have understood or thought about if you hadn't, you know.
Yeah, let's say she said to me before the check came, I'm see us as friends, not as lovers, and I probably would have still paid for it, but I would have looked to see if she reached for her wallet, because I'm not confrontational, and I don't know that I could say to her, would you please leave the tip? Mm-hmm. But that's a tough one.
I know, so, I wouldn't be able to say it either.
Yeah.
When people are brave enough, I'm always so like, I admire that. But
it tells me that where her mind was at, I'm here for the free lunch. But I get that. In your case, you're, like you said, you're a single mom, and if a man wants to take you out for brunch or dinner, let him pay for it. You know, back when I was younger, there was this thing about if you took a woman out for dinner, that meant that he pays for dinner, that he's getting sex that night.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
And that's gone. That's no longer like, you know, I was brought up that way, but I never insist. As a matter of fact, I don't like having sex on the first date because that's not the type of guy I am. Okay, there was a couple of other things here about they want to talk about boycotting apps. Like everybody should just stop using them, and then maybe the algorithm, maybe the Bumbles and the Hinges will all fix the algorithm. So okay, you know what? We're almost at an hour. Okay, Annie,
I'm enjoying myself. This
yeah,
has been great.
It's great. Any other? You have any stories you want to tell quickly, or tell us about your book, your practice, your coaching?
Sure. I've been taking a break because I really, really, really wish that we could go back in time to before people were constantly online.
I agree.
And constantly with screens in their faces. And at the same time, I can't really find any events or
I can't
things
either.
To go out to that are intended for socializing, to meet people. So maybe one day I'll just start doing my own events.
Well, I started playing pickle, but I've been playing tennis all my life. I've had two hip replacements, so after they all healed, I went back on the tennis court. But the club that I belong to is kind of like an exclusive club, and it's not really a place to meet women, single women. So a buddy of mine said to me, oh, you got to go to this pickleball. It's the newest thing. And they have what they call open socials. And they take three courts and they book 4, 8, 12, 16 people. So there's always four not playing. They rotate. And the whole concept is that it's supposed to be singles playing pickleball. And there's your chance to interact. And those four people who are not playing, that's when you get a chance to talk to each other. It was designed as a dating social event.
So cool.
I'm finding that so far, half the women that I found attractive or I wanted to approach either had a wedding ring on or the first thing out of their mouth was my husband. So either I'm going to the wrong place or or they don't get the concept that it's a dating social event that they should be, I don't know. It's not working. So to your point about finding places to go, I don't drink. So I don't go to bars. I don't go to clubs. You know,
at least you're trying. Good for you. I'm proud of you.
Yeah, I'm trying.
You're getting out there. Yeah, well, I do. If anyone is interested in learning more about me, they can go to my website, annietemple.com. I would encourage people to buy my memoir and learn about my life. It's not because I think that I've had such a different or special life or anything like that. It's more about challenging people's beliefs and helping them to see that each one of us comes to the place that we are in our lives because of where we were before. So a lot of things that have happened in my life led me to become one of those people who has unpopular opinions and, you know, a job that people look down upon and all kinds of other, you know, ways that I've kind of clashed or bumped up against society.
For the audience, and I might have mentioned this to Annie the first time we chatted, I had a very negative opinion of sex workers because my ex, I found out, was escorting and dancing, and I was very angry about it, and I got burned. But after talking to Annie and reading her book, I fell in love. I changed my entire outlook on the sex industry in the way you do it. Now, there's a sex industry on there. I have another podcast, and it's about sex trafficking and cults. And we've had some horror stories on there of women who have had to strip and have been trafficked. So that's a whole different thing. Totally. We're not talking about that. What Annie does, you want to briefly explain?
Yeah, sure. It's adult and it's consensual. It's a choice. It's like, the thing is like, people don't bat an eye when someone, for instance, is a nurse, and a nurse touches all the different parts of the naked body.
Oh, yes, she does.
And is involved with their patients very intimately. And this is something that we celebrate. With sex workers, we don't celebrate it because it's sexual. And that's really sad. It really goes to show how much we stigmatize actual sex. And that's a big reason why so many people have so much shame around sex and sexuality and their orientation or whatever it is that they're going through. But in my work, we're just talking about human beings that have desires and intimacy needs that are perhaps not being met. And there's demand for it. And then there's people who are willing to supply it. And it's not, you know, yeah, there are a segment of the type of people who access sex worker services who are only there to get off or for the orgasm, kind of like the people that go on Tinder just to hook up.
Right.
But the far majority, in my experience and in talking to my colleagues, is really just people who are desiring touch, intimacy, care, tenderness.
Communication, because I know you talk.
Yep. Conversation, someone who will be interested in their stories. You know, like, especially in marriages, you find that the wife or husband is bored of the other person's stories after a while, and they don't even listen to you when you speak after a while. And so I feel like people in not very connected marriages and people who are single are in a position, especially in today's society, where you can't go out and meet people very easily, where they have to make a decision of whether they're just going to go without any kind of intimacy or touch for the rest of their lives, or if they will pay for those services. And then the question becomes, why are we vilifying the people who pay for those services as well as the people who provide those services? Because in reality, it's something very special and beautiful that I believe is being created between people. like this, a connection that's being created.
And I want the audience to be clear. So I'm clear, because I think we talked about this last time. So you generally go over, a client will book you for an hour or two, and there's a lot of conversation. Sometimes you just talk, but other times there's deep, intimate sensual massages. And how many percentage of the times where you never have intercourse with them, right? It's always a manual labor.
Yeah.
Right, manual manual release. No, but they get a rub and tug at the end. Yeah. I know it's probably a
manual labor. I love it.
Yeah, manual. I meant manual release, you know, a hand job. Let's just say a hand job.
So percentage of people who don't, I would say between 10 and 20% for sure.
Okay.
And then there's a percentage of the people who want to be touched in that way, but they don't necessarily climax. You know, I'm getting older, I'm 51, and I'm very open about my age, and I attract mostly men who are around my age or older. And a lot of them are struggling with different kinds of issues like erectile dysfunction and whatnot. And so they don't necessarily, that's not the most important part for them.
Right.
Is the climax necessarily.
And
but
that's what
more
turned
the intimacy.
That's what turned my whole opinion around about you, is that you are providing a service that they just couldn't get at home or anywhere else, regardless of whether they're in a relationship or not. I think that I'm single, and I've been single for 2 years. And I think that if you lived near me, I would use your services, because
come get a massage.
Yeah. I wouldn't bat an eyelash, because I just think the conversation, and I might be one of those guys that might say, yeah, no, I don't need an orgasm, but just to talk to somebody for 2 hours. Yeah. So
the naked hug, that's the best part.
Yeah, that's cool. All right, Annie. Listen, everybody, Annie's book, which is no longer called How Sex Work Shaped My Life, it is now called
Healing in Stilettos.
And I
have not updated that on my website yet, but it will be. And I'm also available for coaching services if anybody wants to talk about their difficulties or challenges with accessing intimacy in their lives. I have become an expert.
I that's why you're here, because you are an expert, so... All right, Andy, I wish we could go another hour, but I'll have you on again. There's so much we can talk about, but I just loved your blog, and I wanted to touch upon it from a woman's perspective on the dating app scene. So thank you for doing that.
Thank you.
All right, we'll talk to you soon.